Oh, hello. Who am I, you ask? Well, that's on a need-to-know basis, and I guess you need to know. I'm Donnell from the Watching It Podcast, a little podcast where me and my co-host Robert dive into different TV shows and movies to give our viewpoints and reviews. TV shows like The Boys to the 1999 hit movie The 13th Floor. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, come join us at watchingitpod.com or on any podcast provider.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Thanks for joining the Backlook Cinema Podcast with Zach and Zoe.
On this show, we take a look back at the movies of yesteryear.
That means we're going to talk about some of the best movies from the 70s, 80s, and early 90s.
So thank you for joining us. Now let's get it started in here.
Hi, this is Zach.
And this is Zoe, and welcome to the Backlook Cinema Podcast with Zach and Zoe, where we take a look back at the movies of yesteryear. The reason we started this show was to strengthen the bond between my son Zach and me, Zoe. We watch movies that I love when I was growing up in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, and then we get Zach's impressions on these great movies, which he has never before seen in his life because they came out before he was born. Most of them anyway.
Yeah, sure. If you like our show, then rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser.com, or your favorite podcast app.
And please, please, please follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find the details in the show notes. So, you been up to anything special?
Not really. Nothing really special of what I can think of in my head, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Other than just recently today, I finally got a pentakill on Smite. So that's, I'm finally happy.
Oh,
took
so that's
me
when
so
you...
long to get one.
Is that,
and
is
a
that
pentakill.
When you kill five
yeah,
in a row?
Five people. In one go, there's five people. And it finally happened. I was like, oh, yay, finally. All the hard work I've been going through, all the stuff that's been stolen from me,
yeah,
finally.
That sounds exciting. Today, I heard on the gaming news, like on the gaming podcast, about, what was the game they were talking about? You know what? I think I've totally... What's the new game that's going to come out?
Are you talking about Far Cry?
Yeah, Far Cry 6. They got a chance to play Far Cry 6. And they're digging it. They're mostly digging it. There was one podcast that was talking about specifically the Latinx perspective of the game. Since it's the game takes place, I think, in a fictional country.
Yeah, they all do.
But it's supposed to be a stand-in for Cuba. So there was a lot of, a lot of details that they appreciated that they put in the game. So are you planning on getting that one?
Yeah, I'm planning on getting it. Yeah. I know the game news, I don't know what they are, but Kotaku, they put out basically a article on how people are praising it just because they never got to play the game. And I'm like,
wait,
that's kind of being salty.
I remember that they was talking about the article on Kotaku. I think it was something like, I don't know. It's something about representation, I guess.
Again, it was like they didn't like how, basically, they didn't get to play the game to review it, but other people did.
Right.
And so they got mad. And what they did was they took, basically, you know how when you see a gaming ad, it's like, oh, yeah, this is the 10 out of 10 game. And they just basically take snippets of a review
right.
of the best what they said.
Right.
Basically, that's what Kotaku did, is basically went to other articles, took snippet of what they said, and placed it in their article, and being like, you see this? Look how it is getting positive reviews. Maybe we got it. It could have gotten a positive review, but we won't ever know because we never got it. That's not fair.
Right.
And to be honest, I understand, like, when it comes to game reviews, instead of them getting the demo, they get the full game. But at the same time, it feels unfair. It feels like I shouldn't even play it because I just can watch the video because someone else has it. They have the full game. I can just watch from them.
Right.
And it feels like game companies should really just only have demos out and not the full game being given out to people for a review.
Right.
Just hand out a demo and everything be all well. Because at least the demo's not going to be like, hey, this is the full game. No, the demo's telling me this is what could happen. You might see this again in the game, but you might not because this is just a demo.
Right, right, right.
Other games, they like Final Fantasy, what was it? 14, 13, I forgot which one it was. But that demo, instead of them like giving you like a... No, they basically gave you a different game using one of the characters as a kid with the game mechanics that they're going to have. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Right.
So you get a little taste of what the gameplay is going to be. And then when the final game comes out, you get to fully have that full experience.
Right. You get fully enmeshed into the game. Yeah. Well, I haven't been up to anything special, just trying to get as much Cowboy Bebop as I can, but I only made it up to the third episode. But I found out, here's a funny thing about it. So I think it was the second episode when they got that corgi, right? The dog.
Yep.
So I go into, I guess it's GameStop, and I see a corgi backpack, and I was like, oh, I understand that reference. Like Captain America says, I never even realized that that dog is a Cowboy Bebop reference, but now I'm going to see all the references now.
Yeah, so now whenever you see a corgi, you're like, hey, that's Cowboy Bebop. I like it.
Right. But here's the thing, though. I don't know. I think I keep watching the show when I'm too sleepy because I'll be watching it, and I'm already tired. And so when you're tired, you start getting all sleepy and whatnot, you miss a lot of stuff. So I never even realized that the dude's name, because you told me the cook's name was Jet Black, right. So I guess that's why they chose a black man for the live action version. But yeah, Jet Black, I was like, I didn't even hear that when I was watching the show. I need to watch all three episodes again and make sure I'm fully awake this time, because I definitely miss something. The same thing happens sometimes when I watch Rick and Morty. I was like, I gotta watch it because they talk too fast. I gotta watch that again because I was way too sleepy. But
I know when I wear my Iron Mask, people are like, oh, you talking about, they think that it's for London, the Queen. I'm like, no, this is from an anime. What?
Right, I'm sorry.
Respect to the Queen, but I really don't really care about that. This is from an anime.
Right.
Not the Queen's dog. No.
Right. So have you watched Master of the Universe Revelations yet?
No.
Man. I'm about to disown you. I'm about to put you out on the street. I'm about to guide your eyes out because you need to see this show. What about what you call it? The Marvel show, What If?
No, I have not yet.
Man, what is wrong with you?
Nothing. I don't feel like watching something, I don't feel like watching.
You're gonna have me like an old European lady out in the streets going, "You are not my son." That's what I'm gonna be like. I'm gonna be out in the street crying. Talk about, "You are not my son."
Yeah, and I'm just going to walk straight in the house and look like you're a weirdo and then ignore everything you've been saying.
That's okay. I'm going to be out in the street. I'm going to put on the old lady rags. I'm put on the hair scarf.
Yeah, you do that. You go ahead and do that. And when people look at you like a crazy maniac,
yeah.
I'm just going to be like, yeah, that's not, I don't know that, man.
As a matter of fact.
Call the cops.
I'm going to go, "You are not my son." And then I'm going to go, He's my son. He's really my son.
No, I'm calling the cops. I don't know this man. He never been here.
Look, you got two shows to watch. I mean, I let you slide on all the Marvel shows, you know, the Lokis and the Scarlet Witch. Uh-huh. And I let you slide on it, but you have to watch What If. That's what I'm saying. You have to watch What If, boy. You
don't
know.
Let's
go on. Let's go on to the next section. So later on today, we might have something special for y'all, or we might not. We're going to find out how this goes. But in the meantime, why don't you let us know what we watched?
We watched Major League.
Major League. And that is in reference to Major League Baseball. Why don't you tell us what Major League was about?
The new owner of the Cleveland Indians put together a purposely horrible team so they'll lose and see can move the team to Miami. But when the plot is uncovered, they start winning just to spite her. That was by JGP3553 at yahoo.com. Viva IMDb.
That's beautifully read, although that's via, not viva, but you're good. Viva. You're doing good. You're chucking right along. So who's in this movie?
We have Tom Berenger.
Tripped you up. Tom Berenger.
Oh, Berenger as Jake Taylor. He was in Rustler Raspberry.
Rhapsody.
And Inception and Platoon.
All right. So I kind of snuck in Rustler's Rhapsody. It's not like a famous movie. Most critics don't even think it's good. Audience think it's good. I love that movie. I might have to put that on a list. Yeah. It's called Rustler's Rhapsody. So where he plays a geeky cowboy and it's a beautiful movie. Next is the incomparable
Winning.
winning Tiger Blood dude himself, Charlie Sheen, as Ricky Vaughn. He was in, among his many appearances on TV shows and movies, The Three Musketeers, Wall Street, and Hot Shots.
Doesn't he have a brother?
But yes, brother, he has a brother, Emilio Estevez.
Yeah, that's
and his father is Martin Sheen. You remember from previous episodes.
Yeah.
All right, who's next?
Corbin Burson? Burson?
You know what?
Burson, yeah.
I might have spelled his name wrong. I think it's supposed to be Burson.
Burson, okay. He was Roger Dorn. Dorn, yeah. He was in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, L.A. Law, and Psych.
Yeah.
I remember that show.
Oh, you remember Psych? Yeah. Oh, hold on. I think we're getting a message. Nope, we are not getting a message. It's something from, it's just a notification on my watch. It means absolutely nothing. So Corbin Burnson, he's best known for L.A. Law and Psych. But you remember Psych?
Oh yeah, if I'm, it was a detective and a cop. One of them's a psychic,
right?
And people
He pretends to be a psychic.
He pretends. But somehow they still solve the crime. I'm like,
he solves the crime because he's brilliant. He's like, he's a brilliant dude. But for whatever reason, I watched the entire series. For some reason, he wants to pretend to be a psychic. So that's his
I mean, listen, if you're that smart, go ahead. Call yourself a psychic.
Right. That's what he does. That's his thing. He calls himself a psychic. But he's basically Sherlock Holmes, who's a con man. But yeah, so he's famous for that show. So and he's done a couple other things. Every time I see him, is a delight. There was a movie that me and your mother saw. It's basically a black horror movie, and I think it's something in the hood, like zombies in the hood or ghosts in the hood. Yeah. I can't remember. But the reason I bring it up because that's where we got the word neglet from. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was out in the ether back before they made it, but it was the first time that me and your mother had heard it, and that is what we referred to you as we called you a neglet.
That's
it's a bad word. Don't go about saying it at work. Yeah, don't spread that out because that's a bad word. But yeah,
I mean, we got music doing that already. So
right. But that's a fun word. It's a fun word to use. Who's next?
We have. I'm pretty sure this is on you, D.
I said Corbin. Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That is on me. My bad. Margaret Whitten. She was she played Michelle Phelps. She was in Secret of My Success and The Man Without a Face.
Then we have James Gammon.
Mm-hmm.
He was Lou Brown. He was in Cold Mountain, Silver Bullet, and The Iron Giant.
Right. So, actually, I have some notes on that dude. So, that I had wanted to mention. James Gammon. Is that what you said?
Yes.
All right. So James Gammon, he looks like Wilford Brimley. I feel like he's I don't want to say he's a low rent Wilford Brimley, but he's basically a Wilford Brimley twin. You remember who Wilford Brimley is?
No.
All right. So the audience will get this reference. You won't get this reference, but the audience will get this reference.
Congratulations.
All I can tell you is that Wilford Brimley, he used to do these life insurance commercials. No, wait a minute. Was it life insurance? Let me think about it for a second. I can't remember. But he used to do these commercials. And before that, he was in a movie called Cocoon. And people just know him for his thick mustache. Like, he had a mustache. Gammon had a mustache. But Wilford Brimley, he had like a walrus mustache. Like, it's one that can't be denied.
No, that was the guy who basically pissed on the paper.
Right, that guy. Okay. Right. So go ahead. You just did one. So the next is Renee Russo. She played Lynn Wells. She was in The Thomas Crown Affair, Ransom, and Avengers Endgame.
Really?
Do you remember who she was? She's a little bit older in Avengers Endgame, obviously, because this movie is in 1989. So do you have any thoughts on who she might have been?
No.
There were like three women in the film.
Was she in the Iron Man suit?
The Iron Man suit. No. I'm talking about in this movie right here.
Oh,
so one of the three women in this movie.
The one that she was the one that used to do at athletic sports, but then stopped.
That's and became right. There you go. You're getting it. So who you think she played? Think of that face that you're thinking of right now. Think of who she played in Avengers Endgame.
Okay, the only one I can
a clue. clue, she was also in Thor the Dark World and Avengers Endgame.
Okay, she was that female that Thor liked.
You're close. Remember, she's older now. Remember, this movie is almost 30 years old.
Oh, she played Thor's mother.
There you go. And the reason I play Avengers Endgame is because this is my favorite movie. Well, it's my favorite Marvel movie that she's in when she told Thor, remember, I'm a witch, or I was raised by witches, or something like that.
Yeah, so, I know my own son.
Right. So, what was next?
We have Wesley Snipes. He was Willie Mays Hayes. He was in Blade, White Man Can't Jump, and Undisputed.
Right, so I didn't even realize that he was in this movie, and he's been in so many movies that we've watched.
You realize when he first shows up.
Right. And I was like, oh, he's in this movie. This is early. This is like really before he became a star. This is early in his career. So, he has so many credits. I just listed some random credits. It's like, you know what movies Wesley Snipes been in. So the next one is Charles Cyphers. He played Charlie Donovan. He was in Halloween, Assault on Precinct 13 that came out in 1976, and The Fog, the 1980s version. So he has a long credit history.
Charlize?
That sounds right. Charlize.
Charlize Ross. She played Eddie Harris. She was in Hoosters. Who's? Hoosters?
I think that's Hoosters. That's a dude.
Oh, that's a dude? Okay. Right. Eddie Harris. Hoosters?
I think that's Hoosiers.
Hoosiers, Basic Instinct, Bill and Ted Bogus Journey.
Right. And then next we have Dennis Haywood. He played Pedro Carreno. He was in, I brought up Masters of the Universe because he does a voice on Masters of the Universe Revelation. He's one of the voices. He's an absolute power and he's on 24. So you know him as
the Voodoo Man.
First. Do you know which character we're talking about?
Yeah, he played the Voodoo Man.
Right, he was the Voodoo player. So he is like, he's too young. You're not gonna know. You know the Allstate commercials where he's like, "That's what Allstate stands."
Yeah.
Who's got your hand? So who's holding your hand? Or, you know the logo.
That's him.
Is that dude?
You know what's funny? I somehow mistaken for Denzel Washington at times. I'm like, oh, there's the one. Apparently that wasn't him.
All you got to do is wait for him to talk, and that deep voice come out. And it's like, oh, that's not Denzel Washington. Is that voice? That voice is everything.
You know,
so I was looking up his credits. He's been in a bunch of cartoons just for his voice.
You know, if I can't get Morgan Freeman or Denzel Washington, he's my third choice.
Right. Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
He's the third choice right there in the dark.
You're absolutely right. This dude is amazing. So, where are we at now? I'm on the wrong.
Denise. Jay? Or Dennis? I think it's Dennis.
Jay? No, I just read that. We're on K.
Okay. Andy Romero. Romero?
That's Romano.
Oh, Romano. He was Pepper Leach. Leach?
Yep.
Okay. He was Under Siege and Erasure.
And then we have Bob Uecker. He played Harry Doyle, and he was a Mr. Belvedere. That was the announcer. So there's some funny things about him in the... what you call it, that we're going to do. But what's funny about him is that I've only known him as in playing in Mr. Belvedere. It seems to be like the only thing he's really known for. Like, he's done a couple of other projects, but Mr. Belvedere is really the only thing that anybody really knows him from. And he hasn't really done anything prominent since then.
And then we have Stacey Carroll. She was Susan Dorn.
All right. And that is the rundown for the actors. Why don't you let us know who directed this fine flick?
This was directed by David S. Ward. He directed Down Periscope, King Ralph, and Canary Row. Canary Row?
Yeah. Cannery Row. Cannery Row. So, as far as this goes, he was... those are some okay movies, I guess. He mainly did comedies, but he didn't really direct too many movies, I guess, because I think Major League was his big hit, and he hasn't really done anything that was super fantastic since then. So this was also written by David S. Ward. He wrote The Sting, which I guess is a prominent movie. I don't know. I didn't do any research. And he did Steelyard Blues. I mean, he wrote these. Like, he wrote The Sting, he wrote Steelyard Blues, and he wrote some of the movies he directed, like King Ralph and Cannery Row. So he writes more than he directs, and so I think he's better as a writer than as a director. That's what I'm guessing.
Music is by James Newton Howard. He did music for King Kong, The Dark Knight, and I Am Legend.
You know, I probably wrote all those down before because we talked about James Newton Howard many times. He's been in many movies. So I just put down the things that he's most known for. I was like, okay, I get it. You're a famous musician, dude, who writes for all the movies. I get it already. Just going to write a couple things down. So this is the executive producer was Mark Rosenberg.
Yep, and that's it for the rundown. If you're enjoying the show, remember that you can get t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, jerseys, and more at our website, backlookcinema.com, where you can click the link to either teesprings.com or tpublic.com. Now we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back to talk about our favorite parts of the movie and some movie trivia and find out what some of the critics thought.
Hello, everyone. This is Robert with the Watching It podcast. We're a show that covers TV and movies. Join me and my co-host Donnell each week to talk about shows like Loki, The Lower Decks, Snowpiercer, Palm Springs, and Collateral. You can find us at watchingitpod.com or anywhere you get your podcast.
So you went to the secret forbidden land of Ty Lo and got yourself a giant-sized foo dog. The foo dogs of Ty Lo are adorable and fiercely loyal, but cleaning up after dog poop from a foo dog can be problematic. What you need is our Mini Backhoe 616 from Stark Industries. The Mini Backhoe 616 is a breeze to use and no bigger than a small golf cart. This is an absolute must for foo dog owners as it makes cleanup a snap. This specialized backhoe comes with dozens of options and are made to order. Order yours today with a 10% discount. Just use discount code BACKLOOK.
And we're back. So now we've come to the moment that you've all been waiting for. We're going to get Zach's impression on this movie. Zach, let us know what some of your favorite parts of this movie are.
What was it? The beginning where she comes in. The new owner, the widow of her, you know,
whatever his name was,
yeah, comes in like, okay, you know what, this team is doing horrible. Okay, it's flat out doing horrible. So this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna get the worst of the worst. Here's a list of people to find, and then one of them like, but this one didn't cross him out.
What did he say?
But this one already passed.
He said, this one's dead.
Come on, okay, cross him out then.
He was like, just cross him out. And most of it was like, I ain't never heard of this guy.
Yeah,
this,
I never heard of this one.
This guy is lame, and this guy is a loser. It's like, yeah, get them all. These are the players I want.
I was like, wow, she does not really care about the team. She really wants the team to move to Miami.
So what's the other part you like?
Let's see. They're getting the team together and they're listing off the people who showed up. And then one person who's not on that list comes showing up and they're like, who is this guy? He's not even on the list. And that man is, where is he? Trying to find his
Willie Mays Hayes.
Yeah, Willie Mays Hayes.
Played by Denzel Washington.
No.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that wasn't on the list. Remember, because they took him out of the dorm.
Yeah, I think you should look at who Willie Mays Hayes is, because I'm pretty...
All right, so Willie Mays Hayes was played by Wesley Snipes.
There you go.
Now I'm getting it. I'm not confused anymore. Yeah. I was still forgetting who it was. I'm getting confused like you are now. Uh-huh. I guess all black people look the same. Uh-huh. They're all dark. Uh-huh. They're all dark. Uh-huh. So,
so yeah, he comes in. All happy. They tell him to park in the back. They're still confused on who he is because he's not on the list. So they let him on. And when they go to the next scene, they're in the locker room. And in that locker room, they have bunk beds. And he's sleeping on the top. And what the managers did, they had cops come in at night.
I don't think those are cops. I think those are security.
Security, whatever. They had cops uniforms. It doesn't matter. They come in, lift up the top of the bunk bed where he was sleeping at. Brought him outside the next day. Everyone is training except for him because he's still in the bed and he wakes up And he's like, I've been caught already? And it's like, wow. Right, you're telling me you expect him not to know that you did not belong?
Or not only that, but he it's almost like he expected to get caught. Right, like yeah. He knew it was going to happen, but
he didn't expect that soon. I guess he expected like maybe a little sooner, but not doing when he was asleep.
Well, later. I think he expected later. I think what he was going to do, he's going to prove himself, and they was going to let him on the team anyway.
I mean, he did. He does prove himself.
Right. So while they're running sprints, he gets out in his pajamas and bare feet, and he runs down the line in between the other two sprinters, and he just smokes them. It's like he's running, he catches them up from behind and he smokes them. He just totally beats them in a sprint. And so when the coach saw that, they have managers in baseball. So when the manager saw that, he was like, give this guy a uniform.
I was like, that reminds me of a joke from Family Guy.
What's that?
Where basically you had the white runners and the black runners, and they let the white runners run first. And then the black runners run second. And then the black runners would catch up to the whites. And they're like, whoa, that was a close one. I'm like, wow, okay.
That's messed up.
I mean, it's Family Guy.
Family Guy is wrong with that one.
You gotta expect it.
All right, so what other parts you like?
I'm trying to... So you have... what's his name? They gave him the nickname of Wild Thing. Ricky Vaughn.
Vaughn. Right.
And basically, yeah, he's a prisoner. He went to jail. He was locked up. Because when they called him, it was like, yeah, I don't think I'll be able to make it.
Yeah,
but he does
him,
make it.
They invited him to practice, and he was like, I don't think I'm going to make it. And he in jail.
But yeah, he makes it. And they see that he has a good arm. He has a good throw. But the major issue is, he could cap someone. He couldn't.
He's throwing all over the place. It's like when you play baseball, you throw it in a very specific area, right? Where you actually supposed to throw it where the batter can hit it. You know, you got to give the batter a chance to hit it. He's throwing it over their heads. He's throwing it behind the batter. He's hitting people with it. And he's firing these balls. He's throwing it like 60, 70 miles per hour. Like all in that general area, but not where he's supposed to be hitting. Even when he's practicing, you see that. They have like
a metal
stand,
and he's just saying he has
like
been hitting the
player.
Stand.
Right, right.
I'm like, man, could you just aim
the crap
to the left?
Baseball player.
I'm like, just aim to the left, down a little bit lower, then you'll be fine. But you're aiming directly at him.
Right, 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 right. So he's all over the place.
Let's see. Then you get trying to remember his name. Where is it? Oh, my goodness. Pedro. He's like, yeah, he can hit a fastball. But what's his handicap? He can't hit a curveball.
They didn't even say that. He was like, I don't understand why this dude is with us.
Oh, yeah, why?
And then he was like, okay, now throw a curveball. He couldn't hit a curveball to save his life. No, what's the funny thing about Pedro? He always blamed the bat.
Oh, yeah,
like it was
the
bat's fault.
Talking about the bat is afraid. I'm like, are you sure? I'm pretty sure it's just because you just can't hit it.
Right, right. He's talking about the bat is afraid. So, early you mentioned Wild Thing. I was just looking something up. So, Wild Thing, I don't know if you heard that song before.
I'm pretty sure I heard that song before.
So, it's a really popular song. It's by the Throgs. And that was basically the moniker of this whole movie because of that baseball player. You know, they called him the Wild Thing. So, they played the song all the time during the movie. Hey, I always want to give you a chance to hear that song.
Then they make sure you heard the full song at that too.
Right. I don't know if they played the full song, but they definitely played it a lot. So what else you got?
Trying to remember. Okay, so again, this is the same in the area of the same scene. One of the guys, I forgot what his name was. Where is it? Doyle. Harry. So Harry is like, yeah, you know, I can't be getting on my knees. I can't be having my face hurt. See, I got the medical papers to prove it. See, right there.
Right, right,
and
right.
And then this is Lou Brown, who is the manager.
Right.
He looks at it, throws it on the ground, unzips his pants, takes a piss on it, and it's like, that's what I think.
Right,
and
right.
And then just walks off. I'm like,
he didn't even say that.
He didn't say that. Yeah, because he was like... Yeah,
actually, what happened was... the player, he asked him, what do you think of that?
It's what do you think of that?
What
my contract.
Was, he was
give me sit-ups or...
Right, he's an outfielder, right? So his job is to catch the ball. When it goes out, he's, I don't know if he's outfield or infielder, but his job is to catch the ball, right? So they're throwing the balls are like they're imitating the ball going in his direction from a batter hitting it. So the ball hits the ground. He's supposed to quickly pick it up and toss it to a baseman or whatever. You know, that's his job. But he's not doing it because he don't want to go through the athletic.
He doesn't want to ruin his knees. He doesn't want to ruin his face.
He don't want to slide and catch the ball. He don't want to dive and catch the ball. He don't want to do anything extraneous to catch the ball. So the manager was like, okay, you're going to do, I don't know, I think it was sit-ups. You're going to do like 20 sit-ups.
20 sit-ups.
Every time you don't pick up a grounder, you don't get the ball, you know, 20 sit-ups. And then that's when he pulled out his contract, talking about he don't have to do calisthenics. Because that's the type of exercise that is.
What do you think of that?
What do you think of that? He just, unzipped his fly and just took a piss on it and just walked away.
Another funny thing that he did was like he told Willie that every time he hits an air ball, he has to do 20 push-ups.
Right, right. And Willie so he's a great runner.
But he can't hit a ball.
Totally useless if you can't hit the ball, because you have to hit the ball. The only time you run in baseball is when you run it on bases. That's why especially back in like the 80s and even earlier, you had a lot of baseball players that looked like they was out of shape. Like they were a little thick around the middle, because the only time you ran was to run around bases. And if you hit a home run, if you hit the ball far enough, you ain't got to run. You ain't even got to run that fast, right? So Willie was good at running. That was his thing. That was the only thing he had to do. But if you cannot hit the ball, the skill is useless. So, and that was his problem. He kept popping a fly ball that wasn't going nowhere. So every time he hit a fly ball, he had to do 20 push-ups. And then do you remember how many he did when he got back from the first training?
You talking about how many push-ups?
Yeah, he had complained about it when the team had got out of.
I'm not even training. Sure.
It's 200. He ended up doing 200 push-ups.
I mean, that's what he gets for hitting 5 air balls.
Right, 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 right.
Okay, so another good scene is when they're. I think this is the second time, and they're basically checking the lockers because they're making sure they don't get a red card. So they're going to the lockers, checking it. What's his name? Jake check his. He's perfectly fine. What's his name? Pedro check his. He's basically, this man's doing all voodoo, making sure he doesn't get a red card.
He does a full-on prayer before he opens his locker.
And I'm like, okay then. You're basically definitely making sure you're safe with your voodoo magic. Willie checks his. And instead of celebrating there, he goes outside to celebrate because Jake told him and Ricky to basically not celebrate in front of the other guys because they might have gotten cut.
Right, right. So you don't want to celebrate.
Yeah, especially when you lost the game. No, right. You don't want to do that. So Willie goes out and he celebrates. He's happy.
He's like dancing and everything.
Ricky checks his, and he's like, he sees the red card. So he goes to Brown. He's like, what is this? This is not right. He's like, I didn't put that there. Someone must be playing tricks on you. And he automatically knew who it was.
Right, right, right.
I'm like, how do you even know who it was off the dot?
Because they were beefing earlier. Oh, he was the only person that they beefed with. Like, they was beefing when he first stepped in because dude was making fun of him. Yeah. Like, making fun of his haircut because he had a wild haircut.
Oh, I forgot another good thing from that part.
What's that?
When Pedro goes up to him and takes the whatever woolly thing he has on his clubs, on his golf clubs.
Oh,
and
yes.
He's like, so, a hat for my back. I'm like, sorry.
Hold on. Who was that? Let's look up this dude. Oh, shoot. I'm looking at my phone. Because we want to set the scene.
I can't remember. Because I remember it was Pedro and I believe it was Roger, because he was
So Pedro, when he steps on, Roger has a bunch of golf clubs, right? So he got a golf bag for the golf club, but he's all fancy. He's the richest player on the team because he's basically set up for free agency. So after this season, he's going to leave the team. So he already got that good baseball money. Everybody else are basically bums that they got from somebody that they got from the dregs of society. So he has his fancy clubs. He's got these woolly, these club warmers. I guess if you're rich enough, you put clubs over the ends of your golf clubs, or you put these
warmer mitts.
Yeah, these warmer mitts or whatever. I don't even know what it is. I don't know,
but it's just funny.
I don't play golf. They got warmer mitts on top of the end of the clubs, like, and he's, you know, hauling around all Mr. Fancy. Pedro comes around. He just snatches one off.
Put it on his head. Half for my bat. I'm like, what? I'm sorry. Half for your bat? I'm sorry. What?
You know what? It makes just as much sense of putting it on the end of a baseball bat as it does
and then
putting it
like,
on the end of a golf
hey,
club.
You can't take that. Paige looks like, I can't take what now? He's like, you go ahead and keep that. Go
right,
ahead.
Right,
and then
right,
he
right.
hides the rest of his golf club. Because
right.
he knows, oh yeah, this is going to get taken. I can't trust Pedro.
Right, right, right. So, and Pedro ain't interested in golf. He, you know.
Pedro don't care.
Maybe you just give him the rest of your club warmers. I don't know. So
half for my bat. No.
So we was talking about the attack that what's his name, Roger
got on from Rick.
Ricky had attacked Roger because Ricky instantly knew it was Roger. They get into a brawl, but they break it up. So what was some of your other favorite parts?
Trying to remember what was the other favorite part. It's kind of hard trying to remember off the top of my head. Oh, geez.
Just skip around. You ain't got to follow the narrative. Just skip
I'm
around.
I'm not trying to follow the narrative. I'm legit trying to get to my favorite parts. I guess we can go to how Jake does not know how to give up on one girl.
Yeah, like, that was... That
three
was
times this man... First time he sees her at a restaurant, goes to her. C does not want anything to do with him. Then goes to the library where C works at. Because the call failed because she gave him a fake number.
Right. What you do to get rid of a dude or a girl for that matter.
Again, go and I'm like, I'm surprised you know where she worked at, but okay, whatever. Goes to where she worked at, bothered her about it, then followed her home because one of the guys was like, hey, why don't you just follow her home?
Right, right. And here's the thing, right? So that's his ex.
Isn't that a juvenile thing? Yes.
Right. That was his ex. So he's trying to get back together with his ex, which is kind of a weird point in the story. I guess they wanted to build it up. So they built this little subplot there. But it's so weird. So he's doing all the creepy things, all the things that would not be acceptable in society today. And there are certain things that I don't know how he does. Like you say, he follows her to a place that he thinks is her house.
Yeah, and that's
and then
not...
they go into the elevator girl. Actually, he's still kind of feels weird about following her, right? So he doesn't go in right away. He goes to a bar and, you know, takes a couple of drinks. Then he says, oh, heck with it. I'm going to go and try to see her anyway. So he goes into the building. He goes into the sixth floor because he knows in the sixth floor. And somehow he is instantly in the apartment. So that's the weird thing.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't have
weird.
To knock on the door.
That is weird. Like, apparently the elevator just leads up to the room.
Right, but usually, there are apartments that are built like that, but usually there's, like, an atrium where you still have to knock on somebody's door, or the elevator is locked, and it doesn't open unless you have a key or something like that. It just doesn't open up into somebody's home, right?
You know, all I can say is maybe someone else is going in, and he followed behind him. It's like, oh, yeah, can you hit six for me? Thanks, man.
You can hit six, but the doors won't open. Actually, most places, you can't even get up to that floor, but... If it goes up there, then, you know, the doors won't open. So that doesn't make sense. Not sense.
You know, so doesn't it make sense when he does follow her home and then he somehow gets inside the
house?
He's
in the house. He's a stalker. He's a creepy stalker. He is in. That's the other part I'm going to break up.
I was like, how did he get in the house when he doesn't have the keys?
I was like, how
does he not lock her?
He just shows up.
Like, I was like, does he not lock her doors? Does he just willingly
that's the only thing that
oh,
makes sense.
Maybe no one's going to follow me home.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't see me at that game. I'm just going to go home and no one's going to know.
Yeah, nobody locks their doors in a metropolitan area like Cleveland. Yeah, nobody does that. The crime rate is not acceptable, right? So, I don't know. That kind of weirded me out. But yeah, so he stalks her and until she gives in. And that's it. Like, he stalks her, he woos her, because she's about to get married. He's able to woo her, and then they do the deed, and then you basically don't see her again until the end of the movie, right?
Like, oh, so look, I'm not married. I'm
right,
like,
right, right.
Really?
Right.
That one scene worked? Okay.
That's what's kind of messed up about this B-plot, because, you know, you skipped over everything. Like, you skipped over her journey about how you know, her breaking up with her man or whatever.
I mean, she kind of, I get, they did throw it in there where it's like, well, you know, you cheated on me. There was this fraternity test that
came.
No,
I'm talking about as far as her, like, she was supposed to get married.
Oh, yeah.
Her, so she had to break her engagement.
Oh, right? Yeah. They could have sold that.
None of that, right? That needed to be more beefing up. I mean, it's hard to put that in the movie, especially this movie. But if you're going to put it in there, it needed to be beefed up. And they didn't do nothing with it. It's like, she's gone, and then she's back at the end of the movie. That's kind of weird. So... What other parts can you remember?
I remember when, I think this is the first time going against the New York Yankees.
Right, right.
And basically, Willie? Is his name Willie?
Willie Mays Hayes?
Yeah, Willie. He basically tells one of the catchers that, you know, he has 100 pair for each game.
Oh, and he got these gloves.
Yeah, he has gloves, and he's basically each game, he's going to hang it on the wall.
His plan is that every time he steals a base,
oh yeah, every time he steals a base,
he's going to buy a new pair of gloves and hang them on the gloves.
Right. I'm like, I'm sorry, hang them on the wall.
Right.
I'm like, why are you wasting so much money on a pair of gloves?
That's what baseball players do. They do weird stuff. No, athletes in general. It's like some athletes like to wear the same underwear every time. You remember Space Jam? You know, it's something. They all got something. So this was his
allegedly
thing.
He keeps them clean though.
Yeah, allegedly. We're not going to talk about that. So what's your other favorite scene?
Okay. So this is when the widow comes in and she's upset because, you know, the team is winning, and Brown is upset because I guess some type of hot tub was supposed to be fixed, but it's not fixed. There's no hot water, and then she basically tells them, I guess she doesn't tell them why.
Right, she doesn't tell them why she's making their life miserable. Yeah, she's making their life miserable on purpose.
Yeah, but she goes around, she knocks on Charlie Sheen's cup. She goes about, she slapped Pedro's butt. And then it's the funny part when she turns around, they all flip her off. And this is that's the Japanese way they do it. They just all flipped off, and I was
right,
like,
right.
The motion. I love it all.
Right, right. It was all
they
synchronized.
They all flipped it off.
Right.
And it went back to doing what they was doing.
Right, 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 right. That was your one outburst in the movie. So, yeah, that was the, the other version of FU.
Yeah,
or
that's
up yours.
Yeah,
one of
in
those.
Japan, that's how they just say
right.
FU.
Right, right, right.
Flat out and simple.
Right. So, that's funny. That was a great part. So yeah, so she's like earlier in the movie you see that she's cocking and scheming because they're starting to play better. Like even they don't know what that they've been put together to lose, and they're supposed to come in last in the ranking. They're actually going up in the ranking in baseball. The crowds are starting to come to the stadium because she's trying to keep the attendance low. See, her scheme is that she wants the team to come in dead last because in the contract that she has, she wants to move from Cleveland to Miami because she hates living in Cleveland. She owns a team, but she doesn't want to live in Cleveland. She wants to move to Miami. So what her scheme is that she wants to make the team play so badly that people stop coming to the games. And a contract, if not enough people show up for the game, then she can move. She can break her contract and move. So they go up in the rankings anyway without even knowing what she's doing. So she decides, well, she's going to make their life miserable.
First,
taking a plane, and then they're taking like a jetliner, and then they're taking a plane with propellers on it.
Yeah, then after that, they're taking
downgraded.
A bus.
Right, and then they get downgraded to a bus because they're playing too good. And it's like, if you're on a bus, you're more weary after the bus ride than if you're on a plane, right, or a prop plane. So the longer the trip, the harder it is for you to play, and she's trying to make them play worse by giving them crappy equipment, by not making improvements or whatnot. And none of this is really working.
No, surprisingly, none of it worked. It's like, yeah, we're still moving up in the rank. Then, I don't know if she sends the guy to basically explain what she wanted or just tells the guy to fire Brown. I don't know what was that whole point is. But he goes and he explains to Brown that, yeah, she really put together this team just so she can move it to Miami.
Right. He was... he was actually the former manager. Yeah, and he got moved up to GM. So what happened is that he actually wants the team to win because he's the manager of the team. He doesn't want his team to lose.
Yeah, of course.
He never liked this plan.
Like, why would I want my team to lose? Right, so I wanted to win.
Right. So it basically got to the point where he couldn't take it anymore. And that's why he went to Brown to explain what the scheme was. And so, and that's when, what did Brown do after he learned?
Oh, yeah. He basically goes to the team. He has this cardboard that looks like the owner.
It is the owner.
It is. Well,
remember.
Yeah, yeah. The cardboard looks like the owner. She lifted it up.
She is a former showgirl.
Yeah. And so basically, he's like, for every game we win, we strip off a piece.
All right. So what Zachary is describing is a cardboard cutout. And a cardboard cutout appears to be wearing clothes. It looks like a regular dress. And so, but the dress has removable parts. So you take off a piece apart and you see like a naked shoulder. That's the first thing that they see. So the implication is that there's a naked photograph of her under this fake cutout clothes, right? So he's removing the pieces, like removing the pieces of a puzzle. And then it's supposed to reveal her nudity. Now, yeah, this is misogynistic and this is bad, but it was funny.
It was motivation for the team,
right? Because then if they win the games, they get to see her nakedness, right? And this is basically a way of humiliating her. But
humiliating her, proving her wrong.
Right,
can't put a team together thinking that it's gonna no.
Right.
You can
right.
put a horrible team together, and as long as you can help mold it in the right place, you can get the team you need.
Right. So that's this is actually the opposite of Moneyball. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
No.
But it's a movie that came out a couple of years ago. It's with, hold on, let me think if I can. Brad Pitt. So Brad Pitt I don't know if he's a manager or a hire on the team. But anyways, they have like a really, and this was what Brad Pitt was doing is actually based on a true story. So they have a bad team. They want to make it better. So they're going to do it by trade. So they basically use the stats to help them pick the players that they need in order to win the season. So where he's building a better team on purpose, these guys on this movie, they're building a worse team. And it's not working because they have a great coach. And they have great players, but they have good players. And they're trying to make them great players. But so the plan isn't working. So as extra motivation, they get this cardboard cutout. And it's I get that it's misogynistic, and people will feel a certain kind of way about this type of humor, but it was funny. That's all I can say about that.
So this is my last one. This is near the final end of the movie, and this is the setup. Basically, Ricky accidentally slept with what's his name's wife. But the thing was, he slept with Roger's wife.
Right.
But the thing is, he didn't know that it was his wife.
Yeah,
until she told him.
Right, so what happened
But the reason why she did that is because she caught her husband on camera. On TV, taking another female to the back. So she's like, okay then, fine. I'm going to get my revenge too.
Right, so she got her revenge by showing up. Somehow found out where Ricky was at.
I don't know how, but found out.
By magic.
And went then, to him, flirted with him, had sex with him in bed. She leaves, and she's like, bye, Jack. And then he's like, what is he doing here? Looks. And
yeah, when she said Black Jack, she's talking to the other guy.
Yeah, other guy.
Because apparently they're sharing a house or a
apartment, whatever.
Apartment, right. They're sharing an apartment.
And then he goes in, he sees Ricky just, you know, ashamed, just like embarrassed, just not in a good mood. And then he's like, I didn't know it was her.
Right, right. I didn't know who she was.
And right. I'm like, you can't fault him for that. He really did it.
Right, right. Because she never told him what her name was. And because he, until they finished, and he was like, what was your name? And then she told him her name. And it's like,
he's like, who? He's like, oh, yeah. I'm Roger's wife, Mrs. I'm like, he's
right,
like, oh,
right, right,
come
right.
Come on.
Right, right. So he knows that he's been used. So,
and then, she leaves happily. The game's it's not about to start, but it's going to start, you know. Her husband's about to leave. And then she's like, oh, yeah, I got something to tell you. And it's like, wow. It's right. Not even like, oh, yeah, I know what you did, so I went ahead and do it, but I'm just going to let you know about it. Right. No. See, this flower stuff is like, yeah, I'm going to tell you what I did.
Right.
Behind your back. I'm like, okay, wow. Game's going to start. Roz is like, all right, where's Ricky? I need to talk to him. I'm like, no, so, you don't want to talk.
So Roger, and he just told Ricky, just go.
Yeah,
just go hide.
Somewhere and hide. You know, because we're not trying to have this fight at the moment. This is the big lead. This is the big side.
Right.
We're here. This is the last game. We're going against our rivals who have beaten us all the other times.
Right.
This is our one time in our hometown again to prove them wrong that we are better than them.
And so, what you call it? So he had Ricky high in the bleachers. He wasn't in the dugout. So he's up in the bleachers somewhere. Hiding from and then so they got and that was all right because usually he's the starting pitcher. They got the relief pitcher, the other pitcher,
the older one
because he had a better record
and he fought against the New York,
right? He had a better record against New York, so he was going to start, and he does pretty good, but eventually gets to the point where he's an older man, so he's getting tired, so they have to get
Ricky.
They have to get him.
Also, in when Jack is telling him to basically go hide, Willie comes up and is like, hey, so Pedro wants to get a live chicken and kill it.
for his
voodoo, and we don't want people being sick. He's like, I got an idea. Go to KFC, get him a bucket of fried chicken. He's like, here's your chicken. Pedro's looking at him like, this is not what I asked for. I need a live chicken.
But I guess he used it.
Apparently.
Right. So there was a couple of other funny moments, like, I wrote his name down. Hold on.
I was going to talk about basically this is the final stretch. Ricky's on a pitch. Jack goes up to him, talk to him. Brown goes up to talk to him. They're like, okay, we need them to be striked out. Good. Then that's when Roger comes up and he's like, he basically asks him for the ball. Looks at him and he's like, I want you to strike them out. Hands him back the ball. I'm like, oh, I thought you was gonna punch him. Okay.
Right. Because when Ricky's get out there, Roger's on the infield. Yeah. And it's like Roger approaches him like he was gonna punch him, but instead just told him to strike him out.
Yep. It was like, okay, good. And it was always that one guy that Ricky had an issue with that he could never strike out. And I guess because he always threw a curveball or something. I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
No, it's just that he was just a great batter. No matter what Ricky threw at him, that dude was able to hit it.
Now, I don't know what their code is, but I know one is fastball, and that's all he kept throwing for the three pitches.
And then
Jack is taunting the guy. He's like, you know, let's see what else he likes. Maybe he will try something else. Maybe it won't be a fastball.
Right. He's good at psyching the batter out. He's a catcher.
He's real good.
He's really good at psyching the batter out. There was that time where it's earlier in the games where he told this one dude he was something about his wife.
He's talking about your wife. I think she went out with some other guy. You know, took him to the back and whatever.
Right.
I'm like, what in the world?
And so the dude, I forgot. I don't know.
He hits the ball, but it was an air ball.
He hit an air ball and somebody caught it. Right.
So I'm like, wow. Okay.
So what you call it? So the point I was trying to think, I can't remember the players involved, but one of the players is like a super Christian, right? Like he wants to pray.
I know what you're talking about. He basically tells Pedro, talking about, you know, Jesus Christ is also there. It's like, well, he ain't here for me. This is why I got this other thing.
Right.
He's like, well, maybe we would take your booze. He's like, don't you take it.
No one
takes it. And then we get to the scene where he actually does, he's like, he ain't here. Takes a sip, walks out. Next, you know, this magic voodoo nonsense. He gets hit in the head with a baseball bat.
How about his real voodoo nonsense? How about his real voodoo? Maybe it's real voodoo. Maybe he did get clubbed in the head with a baseball bat by the voodoo spirit. Maybe that actually happened.
I don't know. It's just like, oh wow,
and he got what he deserved. He didn't have to be all belittling of Pedro's religion. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He could have been respectful, but that's the problem. But then
we do get to that scene where he's like, you know what? Screw this. I don't need you. I don't need you no more.
Right. He did what Conan did. He's like, oh, yeah. If you don't help me, then to hell with you. He did one of those numbers with the bat.
He finally was able to hit that one curveball he could never hit.
Right.
Home run. I was like, okay, you made it, was a tie. And again, this is before Ricky comes up to
right,
pitch,
right, right.
But you know, it's tied, and they're like, okay, we need to win. This is the ninth inning. Willie is on first base because he was able to hit the ball. He was fast enough to make it, but it feels like he wasn't safe. It feels like the catcher caught it before he was even.
You know, it's not about the catcher catching it. It's about the catcher touching him with the ball.
Touching the base while he catches the
ball.
Right,
right, right.
But I felt like, as though, I'm pretty sure his feet was on base when he caught the ball, but I was like, whatever, sir. You know.
Well, for one thing, it depends on what the umpire says. And the other thing.
Yeah, that is true. It depends on the
umpire. You kind of have to watch it kind of over again to see it, because they shot it in such a way where you can clearly see that he was safe. But it really depends on what the umpire sees. So it doesn't matter if his feet was on the base or not, as long as the umpire calls it safe. Because I'm pretty sure that there have been plenty of people in baseball that have been robbed of the opportunity to win because of nonsense like that.
And then they're basically trying to have Willie steal a base. And they're doing all these hand signs. And the only thing I can tell what is basically saying, them saying okay, is when they take their hand and rub it across, from their left shoulder to their right. It was like, okay, that's the confirm. Okay.
Oh, so you know that one.
No, that's what all I can tell is the confirm. It's like, gotcha.
No, I'm just saying from your time.
No,
in junior high school.
We never did none of that.
Oh, you never did
that? Remember, I was in middle school and we never did none of that.
You never did the sign. Okay.
What rubbing your nose.
Right. Right. Right.
What that means? And
every team has a different sign.
Yeah,
so
every team have a different sign.
Right. So I remember there was a controversy when one team was stealing signs from a different team and they would play drums to let the players know what the play was going to be.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a huge controversy. So
that is not right.
Right. It is not right. So that happened a couple of years ago. So anyways, and there's no rule in baseball. I don't think there's a rule in baseball against stealing people's signs, but I think it's highly discouraging. But so what was the other thing?
So yeah, Willie's basically, he's trying to steal second base. And he gets so far, like, someone gets in the middle between the first and second base. And I'm like, I understand you're fast, but that's a really risky move.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what they do, especially the fast ones. Yeah. They, when they're trying to steal a base, they will get in between first and second base or second and third base or whatever. They will get in the middle. They're not going to wait until, what you call it.
Yeah.
They're going to get all the way out in the middle. And as soon as the pitcher's back is turned, they book, just like you saw in the film.
And then it's like, they make a sign saying, okay, I'm pretty sure this was what the play was, since they did the play, was that Jack was like, okay, I'm going to hit the ball. I'm going to call a bluff saying it's a home run. But instead, I'm going to basically punt it.
Right.
And they're like, it's so crazy that might work. And when I punt it, tell him to just run.
Right.
Don't look back. Run.
Right, right.
And they're like, just crazy. It might work. So they go with the play. The first swing, it basically hits him, I think, or he basically moves out the way so it doesn't hit him.
Right.
But then the second pitch.
Oh, that's because the dude just tried to hit him.
Oh, yeah.
That's why he had to move out the way. That's a foul ball, I forgot what you call it.
A penalty hit, whatever.
Yeah,
where he gets
penalty
to walk.
Like you have to throw the baseball in a certain area. So if you, that's called a ball. It's actually called a ball.
Okay.
So that was one ball, and he did it on purpose because he's an asshole. I'm gonna say it. He's an asshole. He just did it to be an asshole. So, the batter had to duck, and so I think in the second pitch he missed, and then in the third pitch it's when he bunted the ball. So
he punched the ball. He runs to first base, and then Willie runs to, basically, his aim is to run home.
Right. Oh, and also, he set them up for that. Because remember, he was pointing to
the rafters.
He was baiting them.
Basically saying, I'm going to hit a home run.
I'm going to hit a home run.
He
was like,
I'm calling a bluff.
Right.
Hitting a home run.
Right, right, right. And so everybody is waiting for him to do all
home run.
But instead, he bunts the ball.
He bunts it. Runs. And then they're like, oh, God. Yeah. And so they had to go get the ball.
Right.
Throw it to first instead of throwing it to third.
Right, right.
But no, they was like, get him out. Throw it to first.
Right.
They get him out. But the issue is Willie is still running. And so they have to throw the ball to home. And Willie comes in, slides in, just almost being touched by the
The home base.
The home base catcher, right, almost being touched by him, made it safe. And it's like, wow.
Right.
And they won the game.
Right.
Everyone's cheering, happiness.
Right.
And then Ricky gets punched and then picked up by Roger.
Right.
And I'm like, but you still punched him.
Well, he had to get revenge.
I guess.
Because it was eating him up inside.
I guess. So and then, revenge. You know, Jack gets his ex as his girlfriend now. And right. I'm like, that's still weird and wrong at the same time.
Right. So, what you call it? There's also a big moment that I really like. And this will be the last one. It's like when... they finally, so the starting pitcher, he played almost the whole game, but he can't go anymore. His arm is wearing down. And so, and the coach sees it, or the manager sees it. So he calls him out. He's got to switch him out with the relief pitcher, and that being Ricky. Ricky was supposed to start, told Ricky he's not going to start. And Ricky was kind of bummed out about that. So now Ricky comes down and he gets to the doors. And they play Wild Thing.
Yeah,
and the crowd goes around
because
he's everybody's favorite
player.
They're wearing his t-shirt. I want one of those t-shirts. And so that was a good moment.
Oh, yeah, no. Also, she was like, I hate this song.
Right.
The owner was like, I hate the manager.
The owner was like, I hate this song. Right. She hates the song because it's a sign of them winning. And that's why she hates it.
You know, it was another good one?
Was
the
that?
Announcer in the baseball game, like he was just having fun with
right,
calling
that was
the plays.
Bob Uecker. Right.
And then
right.
he was like, and then I believe he cursed one time, and the guy's like, "You can't say damn on here." He's like, "No one's listening to this."
Right. All right, so let's move on. That was a good thing. Oh, let me ask you the final question. Did you like this movie?
Yeah, I liked it.
I knew you would like it. Uh-huh. I knew you would have fun. This is a great movie. It's funny. So, let's move on to trivia. We get our trivia from IMDb. So to start, we'll talk about the real life relief pitcher Mitch Williams with the Chicago Cubs at the time of the film's release was inspired to model himself after Rick Vaughn character. He began to wear the number 99 and had Wild Thing played when entering the games, shortly earning the nickname Wild Thing. In addition, the modern day tradition of relief pitchers, mainly closers, having their own intro songs was largely inspired by this film.
So like, you know what? And we want to, this is our star player. This is our star pitcher. He gets a theme.
Right. All right. So carry on.
During the 2016 baseball season, real life Cleveland Indians players, Jason Kipnis and Mike Napoli acquired two Jabu statues and set them up in a shrine in the team's locker room at Progressive Fields. They initially placed an offering of vodka in it, but then switched to rum, resulting in a 6-0 victory. The Tampa Bay Rays in June and July, they even sacrificed a supermarket chicken to help an end teammate's Yan Gomez?
I think that's Yan Gomez.
Yan Gomez slumps.
Right. So
they had a
6-0 victory over Tampa Bay Rays.
They did real life voodoo. Like, actual voodoo.
Well, I don't think they did real life voodoo. They just got, well, they did sacrifice a chicken.
Yeah, I want to say, you can't say they didn't do no voodoo. When they sacrificed a chicken.
Right. But they had the idol, so the idol was really important. So, when director David S. Ward asked Bob Uecker to play Harry Doyle in the film, Ward had chosen Uecker because of his acting work on the Miller Lite ads and on the sitcom Mr. Belvedere. 1985. It wasn't until Ward met Uecker did he learn that Uecker had been for nearly 20 years the radio broadcaster for the Milwaukee Brewers. So that dude's a real life broadcaster. That's why he sounded authentic.
You know what's so funny?
What's that?
I remember he was in Teen Titans Go. He was in that one episode. I remember that now.
Oh, the sports announcer dude?
Bob Uecker, yeah, he was in Teen Titans Go.
Was he playing himself?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. He would have played himself.
And if I remember the plot, basically, Beast was having a party, and Robin wasn't invited, so Robin throws his own birthday party and tries to get the other Titans to join, but they won't. But to convince some of them, he basically has Bob Urkler for Euchre for Cyborg, because Cyborg is basically, well, you, where he gets excited about old things.
Right.
For Starfire, it was like a double cake.
Oh, so he made his own version of the Teen Titans.
No, he basically was throwing a party.
Right.
And he wanted them to be over there and not be at Beast Boys.
Right.
So basically, he was jealous because he wasn't invited because he's a party pooper.
Right, but you say he had Bob Euchre dressed as Cyborg.
No, he had him over there to get Cyborg to join.
Oh, to get Cyborg to join. Oh, okay. So he told other people to go to Beast Boy's party.
No, no, he told other people to he basically wanted his team to be at his party and not Beast Boy's party.
Right.
To prove a point that he's not a party pooper.
Right.
Despite the fact they had a clip of him calling the cops on Beast Boy's party before.
Right. So did it work?
Yes and no.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that later. So, where was I at?
We're at D, I believe. This is me. David S. Ward is actually a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan. His inspiration for creating the movie was simply because he thought it would be the only way he could ever see the Indians actually win anything. Yeah. He's like, I love this team so much. I want them to win. I'm making my own movie just to have them win. That's all I want.
Right. So that's wild. That's a wild thing to do. And his fantasies came true. And this movie did pretty good. Did I talk about how much money this movie made? I don't think I did. So, just to go backwards a little bit, this movie was released in April 7, 1989 by Paramount Pictures. It grossed $49 million in the U.S. and Canada and had approximately $11 million budget.
It did real good.
Very well. It did very well. So, he got his fantasy came true and he made a lot of money for doing his fantasy. So that's pretty awesome. Not many people get to do that. So after Vaughn strikes out Haywood, he is congratulated in the dugout by a player named Keltner. Ken Keltner was the third baseman on the 1941 Indians whose fielding heroics helped end Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hit streak.
Just imagine being demolished by a man who has just been hitting for 56 and has been not stopped until one game is like, oh, finally, the record's broken. Oh, my goodness. Finally, thank you.
Right.
Let's see. For many of the wide crowd scenes of the climactic playoff game, there were over 20,000 extras in the stands when the team first ran onto the field with the crowd roaring. Dennis Haysbert?
Yep.
Admitted to being emotionally overwhelmed by the experience. Former major league and technical advisor Steve Yeager noticed Haysbert's reaction and said to him, that's what it is like 162 times a year.
Right. Yeah, I guess when he went out there in his baseball uniform, everybody's yelling and screaming. Hundreds of thousands of people. No, I think it was, 50,000? That's not even that many people, it seems.
20,000 extras.
20,000 people just yelling and screaming. That, I guess that would be emotionally impactful. So, where are we at? Charlie Sheen admitted to Sports Illustrated that he took steroids to prepare for his role. He believed that the steroids he took caused him to increase his fastball speed to 85 miles per hour. He was a high school pitcher who was offered a baseball scholarship to the University of Kansas. In the movie, he threw a 101 miles per hour fastball, but in reality, Sheen could only throw in the high 80s. This made it easier to simulate the fastball in the film. So, that was it, huh?
Yeah,
so
he, winning.
When you look at the film, it looks like
he looks like a pitcher. Right,
he looks like a pitcher though. Like when you see his form, I was like, that looks really authentic, and it turns out it is because he was a baseball player.
Did he say he got a scholarship? Let's see. He was offered one.
Yeah, he was offered a scholarship.
He
didn't say he took it. But I'm just saying, just for being offered, he was probably acting by then. Remember, his father's Martin Sheen, his father's actor. So he's probably not going in that direction. But the fact that they offered him a scholarship meant that he was a very good baseball player.
Fans paused to have Charles Sean appear in his Rick Wild Thing Vaughn persona to throw out a commercial?
Ceremonial
first pitch at a 2016 World Series game played in Cleveland. Sean said he was receptive to doing it, but Major League Baseball and the Indians had already decided on other on others to do it.
Yeah, wow. But that would have been awesome if he was able to do that.
Better and nice.
Especially if he came out there with the haircut and the glasses.
I'm pretty sure he, I don't know if he's going to be fully that committed to the haircut and glasses, man.
But that would have been awesome if he was. So, let me find out where we're supposed to be at because
we're on L.
Where are we at?
L.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, shoot. No, we can't be at L because this is a huge part.
At L. Wait, no.
No, that's an I. You're looking at I. Okay. The opponent slugger known as Yankees home run threat Hayward was played by former pitcher of the Milwaukee Brewers, Peter Yolkovich. Yolkovich never hit a single home run in his entire 11-year major league career. In fact, during 8 of those 11 years, he never made a single plate appearance since he was pitching in the American League, which uses a designated hitter to bat for the pitcher. So the big guy that everybody had problems with hitting in the movie. So in real life, he's an actual baseball player, but he's a pitcher, and he's not a good hitter. He's not good at it, right? So I thought that was fun.
In the scene where Jake invades Lynn's party, one of the guests asks how much Jake makes in the major. He replies, "I make league minimum." At the time, in 1989, the MLB salary minimum was $68,000. Average household income in 1990 was roughly $30,000. So he was making a very respectable double the average household income.
Yeah. That's pretty good money. That's pretty good money today. It's not great. It's not super fantastic. It's still kind of on the lower end, but it's better.
It's still pretty good.
$30,000, that you couldn't survive off of that if you make $30. But $68,000 a year, you could do all right. You know, that's pretty good. That's pretty good today. Anyways, I digress. The Rachel Phelps character and her plan to move the Indians was inspired by real life Minnesota Twins owner Calvin Griffin. In the 1970s, during the planning stages of constructing the Metrodome Stadium, Griffin had negotiated for an escape clause in the team's lease, which said that if the Twins' home attendance was under 14 million per season for 3 consecutive years, the team could be released from his contract and leave Minnesota. Like the Phelps character, Griffin let quality players depart via free agency and used cheap, inexperienced rookies and has-beens. The Twins lost 102 games in their first year in the Metrodome in 1982, then 92 games the year afterwards, with attendance under 900,000 in each of those seasons. A group of investors from Tampa bought 42% of the team, and the Twins were on the verge of moving to Florida. To many fans, it appeared that Griffin had weaseled an escape clause into his contract and then set up the roster so that he could put it into practice. The situation was avoided when Griffith sold the Twins to banker Carl Polan. The Tampa group sold its minority stake to Polan, and the Twins remained in Minneapolis. So he had a scheme that's what the movie was kind of based on, right? So this actually was going to happen in real life. Somebody was actually trying to do that using this scheme, but it didn't go through.
Apparently, they don't like where they live. Apparently,
I don't know. It's because of where he lived at. He was just that dude that was doing that.
Right. So most of the filming was done during the summer of 1988, which was one of the hottest summers on record in Milwaukee. This is easily apparent in the final playoff game, where most of the players are wearing long sleeves and jackets to indicate a cool fall. Cool Fall Night, whereas almost all the fans in the stands are wearing short sleeves and shorts. Short sleeve shirts and shorts.
Right. Yes. So they were actually playing inside. Like, so when you say seen them playing on the baseball field, they're supposed to be playing like during like the fall season, but they're wearing long sleeves. So they're wearing long sleeves and long pants.
I mean, on the baseball. When it comes team. To Ricky, you can see him always wiping his forehead.
Right, right.
Because he's just sweating.
Everybody's hot. On that team, everybody's extremely hot and sweaty. But the fans are in their short sleeve because it's hot. So, like, yeah, we fine because we got on short sleeves and shorts. Fine. But the baseball players, the actors were suffering. The actors were suffering in the middle of summer with these long sleeves on. That's crazy. So, while not particularly specified, many of the players in the movie seem to be based on or inspired by former Major League stars Pedro Carreño. According to the author and director David S. Ward, it's partially based on Orlando Carpeda and Wade Boggs, who would superstitiously eat chicken before every game. Willie Mays Hayes, according to Ward, is based on Ricky Henderson. Ryan Duran was the inspiration for the character Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn, according to Ward. Eddie Harris appears to be inspired by Gaylord Perry, who was well known for using outside substances to enhance his pitches. Jake Taylor may be inspired by Carlton Fisk, a catcher who had a long career with the Boston Red Sox and Chicago White Sox. Lou Brown mentions early on that Taylor was an all-star in Boston.
You know, that's I'm trying to figure out who was eating chicken for every game.
They all got some weird. All these athletes got weird superstitions. I'm not an athlete, but I know this much about athletes. They all got some weird superstitious practice that they do in order to win games.
You know, I'm surprised that Eddie wasn't caught because remember in the film he did talk about how he used to like have jalapeno in his nose,
right.
What in the world?
I mean, he was still doing it. It was still on.
I guess it just didn't feel like it. But you know, he's like, yeah, I've never been caught.
Right,
I'm
right,
like,
right.
Wow, okay.
He's like, I'm not young like you. I need help.
And just for you know, even though I don't watch baseball, I already know that is illegal.
Oh yeah, most likely.
Because I remember I was watching Bob's Burgers. They had an episode where Bob's favorite baseball team is in town, and basically the lead pitcher is his favorite. And because of Bob's and his Bob gives the pitcher one of his burgers, and he's been using the grease from that burgers to make his pitch like it used to be.
Right, right, right. So I guess he got caught.
I don't remember if he got caught, but I remember it was the lesson that Bob was trying to teach to his son. What's his name? I can't remember his name, but Bob's youngest son or eldest son, he's a second born, that, you know, cheating isn't always good. Because he was being a mascot for his dad's restaurant, and he was in a mascot race. And basically, you know, he was winning all the time, but he would basically cheat a little bit by knocking over the other mascots, because once you get knocked over in a mascot costume, it's hard trying to get
up. Right.
And, you know, basically that's what the lesson he was trying to, and after, like, I think, yeah, this at the end of the episode, he was going to win, and he was thinking about cheating, but he was like, you know what? Nah, I'm not going to do it. And then he gets knocked over, and then he loses the race.
So he gets knocked over instead.
Yeah.
See?
All right, let's see. Last one. Contrary to popular belief, there is no rule in baseball that says a batter must drop his bat before running the base. He will not be called out for doing so unless an umpire determines that he is not dropping the bat. He's not dropping the bat gave him an undue advantage in running the bases. Of course, this would not apply in the case of a batter hitting a home run. The drop your bat rule is an unwritten rule of baseball that is actually aids base runners, as carrying a bat would interfere with the runner's pumping his arm to gain speed.
Right. So,
because I think they mentioned this particular trivia because in the movie, Pedro is running the bases with his bat.
He gets a home run. He kept his bat with him. I'm like,
right. Good, he's just running around the bases with his bat because his bat was special. So that's it for the trivia section. Let's head on to see what the critics think. So the critics on Rotten Tomatoes, they gave it, the professional critics, mind you, they gave it an 83%. The audience gave it an 84%. So we are all in agreement that this is a great movie. And in IMDb, it got a 7.2 out of 10. So why don't you let us know what the first critic thought?
All right. Allison Rose from Flicks Direct. It's hard to believe that this fun, creative film is turning 30 years old, but it still stands to the test of time, and it is a joy to watch.
I agree.
Yeah.
I concur. So the next critic is Kerry Rickey from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Somebody should tell Ward that winning isn't everything, character is, and this is what his movie lacks. She is incorrect. I disagree. Because you can, all these players have distinctive characteristics.
Yeah, they have characteristics, they have their flaws. And during the movie, you can see them improving on their flaws. We have Rick, who has a good throw, but his flaw is he can't see. So he needs glasses to see where he's throwing.
Right. First he can't aim. And then he gets glasses. And then he gets better at seeing. And then they call him a wild thing. He has a bad attitude. And then you have the catcher. What's his name? Roger?
Jack.
Jack.
Again, okay. he has bad knees. Right. But he's hanging in there. And like, even though you do get to see like one scene where he's on the bus healing his knees after a game, or trying to heal his knees in a makeshift hot tub that they had
I think that was supposed to be a cold tub because he's always putting ice on his
knees. Yeah, ice. Yeah, but you can see that he's still hanging in there.
Right,
he's showing that he can still do what he wants, what he has been doing.
And not only that, but he's a natural leader. He's a guy that keeps the team motivated. So you know, you can see that in his character, and also he's a creepy stalker. Right, he's a creepy stalker, so that's part of his character. And then you had Pedro, the voodoo guy. It's like all these guys have character. I don't know what she's talking about, so I'm just,
maybe she watched a different movie.
Yeah, I think so too. Did I just read that? Oh yeah, so go ahead.
Roger Herbert.
Yeah, that sounds good.
From South Florida Sun Central, seen as an actual ace fireball pitcher called Wild Thing by the adoring fans, it's excellent. So is Burnson as a star-struck third baseman whose portfolio is more important than a hard grounder in the hole.
Right. So, and basically, this reviewer, Roger Herbert, he is saying basically the opposite of what Kerry Rickey is saying. He's pointing out the characteristics.
The characters do have something that you can tell the difference between one another.
Right, He's pointing out their characters. So, you know, I don't like you said, it looked like she watched another movie. So finally, we have Jonathan Rosenbaum from Chicago Reader. He wrote, "Slick predictability is about all it has in mind, down to the last trite freeze frame." You know what? He's right. This movie is somewhat predictable.
I mean, yeah, it's like, oh, look, the owner is trying to put a bad team together. Oh, look, the team is slowly sleeping. And C's not liking it. Oh, no, they made it to the final game. And they're actually getting good. Yeah. And they win.
Right.
Look at that.
Right. The only thing I would say is that, you know, baseball runs in series. So they play a series of games, like a series. So you're supposed to win like 5 out of 7 games. But you don't get a sense of that watching the movie. When you watch the movie, you get a sense that they're playing one game against a team, and then they move on to the next team. So you don't get a sense that they're playing a series. So that's kind of a major flaw in this movie. But yeah, other than that, this movie is predictable, but most sports movies are, right? So it's not about if they're going to win, because they almost always do, especially when you're doing like a true story of a team that actually won. Like there's a movie called Miracle, and you already know that they won because people watched the Olympics and they saw the team win. So the movie is not about whether they're going to win or not. The movie is about how they go about doing it.
Now, as far as predictability, another thing he might be talking about is directing techniques, like how the film was shot, how the, you know, film is edited, the music that they use, that sort of thing. But, you know, I think the journey of them coming from where they were to where they got to is better than like the end results. And like people kind of throw out, this movie was predictable. A lot of movies are supposed to be predictable, right? Because if you try to throw in a curveball and try to do a twist in the movie, either the movie's not going to work or it's going to be an ending that the audience don't like, because that's not the audience. That's not the ending that the audience was led to believe. They want to see the predictable ending, because that is what's satisfying and fulfilling. Like you see, this is especially true in action movies. It's like, it works when the action hero dies, but he has to earn that death, you know, because otherwise he's supposed to win. You want to see Bruce Willis live at the end of Die Hard. That's what you're not trying to see him die. Yeah, you know, we're not about that. So
I don't think Jonathan gets it. Jonathan Rosenbaum, I don't think you get it. So that's about it. That was Major League, and we liked it. We thought it was a great movie. Y'all need to check it out. So let's get to that. Major League, as of this recording, is available on Amazon Prime, and you better catch it quick. You know what? This was recorded 7 days ago, so by the time you get there, it might be gone, because Amazon be wishy-washy with their movies.
Like, one day we have this. Next, you know, oh, it's gone. I'm so sorry.
Right. Sometimes they got a movie for a week and it's gone. I was like, goodness gracious, I don't know how they work out those deals. But yeah, Amazon movies be vanishing. I'm surprised it was here for a couple of months. I'm surprised it's still on Amazon. The next episode we're going to do is Desperado. And that is available now on HBO Max. And one last time, if you like this show, then please help us grow. To do this, you can rate us, or you can write a review on podcaster.com or Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. And you can also share our show with someone. You can use a pound. What do you say? What do you call
hashtag,
it?
Hashtag. Stop saying pound.
Every episode, I have to ask you what the young people call it. You can use the hashtag or at Backlick Cinema on your favorite social media sites. So we were supposed to have a guest this episode. I announced it last episode. We were supposed to have a guest. And that would have been Malik Coleman of the Ice Cold Show. But he had a family emergency. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us on this episode. But he may be able to join us on the next episode. So check us out next week.
Yeah, don't forget that you can contact us at fanmail@backlookcinema.com.
Believe me, it matters. Be safe, hug your loved ones, and be outstanding.